Session number 9005, Jeremy Black, reel 2.
Than we do. Now, I would say influence counts for, I think it'd be impossible to say for nothing, but for very little indeed.
It obviously does matter the fact you've been serving for a particular admiral who has a high reputation, and if he thinks that you have done a good job, then that will count more than if you're serving an admiral who hasn't got such a high reputation. I would have thought that probably is still true, probably rightly true. Because you must be judging on people's judgment, mustn't you? I mean, if you've got a process which operates primarily on, and I think it does, doesn't it, primarily on recommendations. I mean, what really matters are the recommendations that the captains who serve under give you.
Yes.
Isn't that, I mean, what
yes,
what
entirely.
You from, when you, we, certainly from up to commander, from the, say, lieutenant to commander, after all MOD has to go on are the reports.
Absolutely.
That the captains have, obviously the jobs you've done as well.
Yes, they'll be entirely based on the reports of the captains.
And the judgment of the on what sort of captain it is, if he is a captain who is highly respected, then his judgment will carry more weight than a captain who isn't.
I would suspect so. I don't know that because I've never been actually in the, you know, in the circles which do the selection. But it's a fairly rigorous business, and I would guess that that does play some part. But it's done. First of all, it's done by a subcommittee, I think, of three rear admirals, who do the first sort of go through the pile, and they narrow it down a bit, and then it's done by the Admiralty Board members themselves, so that there are a whole lot of individuals doing it. But as you rightly say, what they are doing is looking at other people's reports, yes. And in some degree, what you say, I would guess, was human nature, I don't.
Yes, well, it has to be, it would be mistaken otherwise.
Isn't it? Yes. But I believe that we all have really considerable faith in it. And I think it's, therefore, I think it's a very good system for selecting people to serve in the mainstream of the Navy. What I think is perhaps suspect is the training and the judgment within the promotion system of getting people who are adept in the politico-military field. I mean, I think the system can pick more jellicoes, and indeed I think it has done recently. I think Henry Leach is very similar to Jellicoe, much loved within the Navy, very much less good at sparring with politicians. And I feel this very strongly. I believe our background for coping with the politicians and the press is
How did you find the press?
Wanting.
I mean, you must have had a basement full of them.
Yes, I did. I had 5 reporting daily for 7 weeks, which was a basement full. How did I find them? Well, they came to the thing without any knowledge. I mean, we're talking about a particular circumstance. These particular people had no, they weren't war military correspondents. They didn't know what they were coming to. They hadn't lived in the constraints of a warship, particularly under fire. They didn't like it very much. They were very different animals. A press man is a very individual chap, you know, he fights his own corner. He's not used to a military way of life, which is essentially fitting in with others. Whereas a press man is, in with his story by the deadline and damn anybody else. And those two quite different disciplines, and also an essentially silent service. and essentially open media, they're going to find it difficult living together. I think at the root of it, you've got two things which by their nature are very opposed. I believe, notwithstanding, that if you get pressmen who are used to the military and military men who are relatively used to the press, you can get a perfectly satisfactory dialogue, very successful one for both sides. And actually, I think we're pretty lucky in that respect. But that isn't to say we didn't have some difficult moments along the road.
One thing that would worry me the most of all is the fact that you could never talk to the crew in general or privately without the press being there the whole time. Because
yes.
You can't use a Danoil boy.
No, I use television, you see.
Yes, television.
And the answer is that no, you couldn't. And I had rules with them, whether we were on the record, off the record, or whatever. And when it came to these particular briefings, which were geared to a group of young men who were about to go into battle, which is quite different to a fireside in Hampshire, I quite strictly forbade them to use it. And of course I had the final control because I could actually control what left the ship. Not that I actually, I invoked that very often, but I made it quite clear. And then I was disappointed, and these are the sort of things which are difficult to live with. You see, that having made that perfectly clear, my secretary then came across no less than the chap from the Times sitting in my cabin using my television set and taking down my speech in shorthand. Or no, taping it even, having already been told that he wasn't to use it. These are the sort of things which, it's in the end, life is made up with confidence in people, isn't it? And that didn't help you to raise the confidence level, really.
Were they opposed to you to a certain extent from the very beginning, some of them?
Possibly one was a bit, the chap from The Guardian, I think. No, generally speaking, they weren't. And I must be fair, the actual press we got, I thought, was jolly good. Along the road, we had battles about deadlines. I mean, they didn't comprehend our business. They didn't understand communications. They used a third of my outgoing communications. And I appeared last autumn before the select committee that looked into the media, and I quoted to them what I had standing by one day at priority, or immediate even, level to go out on my circuits. And one was a piece for the CDART, another was a piece for the device which detected the Aton diode, another was something of equal importance. And then I quoted to them from some copy that was waiting to go out at that moment at the same level. And one of them was about the great delight we'd had because we had 36 copies of the Page 3 Girl of the Sun had just arrived, and each mess had been able to have one copy. And then there was Stoker mechanic somebody who was particularly angry that day, tattooed as he was, because he'd just been told that he wasn't going to be allowed to get at the Argies with his bare hands, and similar piffle. So those are the sort of problems that we had. But I've kept in touch. In fact, I had a letter from the Telegraph chap yesterday. I've kept in touch with them, and things are reasonably amicable. But it wasn't easy, to say the least. Not at all. But I was very conscious of their part in the thing as well. I mean, the media had a very distinct role. It isn't just the military. So, I was very conscious that they had a job to do, just as I did. It was unfortunate the two jobs conflicted a certain amount, and will always do so.
Is there any way of training, do you feel, that
yes,
that
I think
would
so.
Help?
Yes. I should be up in the ministry next week or the week after. But I intend to talk about what they think they've learnt from it and see whether I go along with it. Oh, good Lord, yes, I'm sure there is. On both sides. Just knowing each other better for a start. Yeah. Understanding what deadlines. I mean, when a chap wrote about the Page Three Girl, for example, I took a certain amount of moving to convince myself that information like that was required by 4:30 this afternoon any more than 4:30 the week after next, if you see what I mean. Whereas parts for my equipment seem to me much more important. But one's got at least to understand in some degree.
How about the amount of information actually you can send out?
What do you mean, censorship in that?
No, I mean, there's a purely physical problem.
You can get out so many, in the end, so many words a day, really. I mean, I don't know what that means, but
yes,
there is a physical limitation. Yes. You have so many circuits. Yes. We were sending it all by satellite.
Yes.
You had so many opportunities to access the satellite, and things queued up, which is why they didn't hit their deadlines as often as they thought they'd like to, any more than we got our information back as soon as we would like to know. It's just a physical limitation. But I'm particularly interested in the media side of it and how we try and get these things easier and better. I was really quite heartened, I think, by the outcome of the parliamentary subcommittee. I think on balance they discounted very much the those more strident tones that one was hearing from the press somewhere about last summer and early autumn. And they gave, I mean, whilst the ministry and its men did not get a clean sheet, they at least got a very sympathetic hearing. If you get the press against you, they can be very raucous, can't they? You've got to steel yourself against that a bit when it happens. Whenever you take them on, they're a powerful lot, and they're arrogant too. Arrogant and importunate.
They believe above all that what they're doing is the most important thing, I would have thought.
Absolutely. And the fact that you sink while they're getting their piece of news out is neither here nor there to them. They began to see our point of view a bit more when they were about to sink too. Yes. That's all part of the Whitehall scene, I think.
But you said the training of other respects. I mean, obviously that's an area of training. What are other aspects of training that after all, this was in one sense a very unique, almost and really in a sense unexpected situation, though even though there had been training for it.
No, I think the rest came out. The training aspects, on the whole, came out very well indeed. There's one thing for which I wasn't prepared, which I've been quite interested in since, although it was information which was well known. It just so happened that it wasn't, I think, it hadn't appeared in my training and I hadn't actually just registered it, and that's the question of the effects of shock after damage, where you can get lethargy setting in on people. If you get sustained bad damage, people go into a sort of stupor, and it is common to shock. I mean, if in a tube accident or car crash or anything else, or a typhoon, or there's nothing particular about the Navy, but nevertheless, it happens in a naval setting just like anywhere else. And it was something for which I didn't feel prepared. It was something which I've taken quite an interest in since, is to see what you can do to minimise the effect on it.
These are the people that arrived with you, presumably.
Well, I actually first came into contact with it when the Glasgow had a bomb pass right through her, and she got two gaping holes, and I sent some people over to help them block up the holes, which was a difficult job. And they were very struck when they arrived on board to find these people really not doing much to help themselves. And that's what brought it to my notice. And since then, I've read quite a lot about it in a number of other instances. And I think it's a well-known phenomenon, actually. But as I say, it's not ever been brought to my notice, or at least I can't recall it in the course of training, and therefore, had it happened to me, I probably wouldn't have been expecting it, which is... I think we could do something to improve that. But, I thought on the whole, training was proved to be very satisfactory.
Did you find the officers led in the way that the Jewel wished them to do it on the whole?
I think so. Yes, I think so. We're more homogeneous now, you know, the ratings today are so much better, even since the day I joined. I mean, they are quite starkly different to the 50s. They do much more, they're more educated, they're more interested, they're much nicer people to serve with. They get into far less trouble. They have more initiative. They are a very different animal. Very different.
How much punishment do you, sorry, talking about trouble, how much punishment, in fact, did you meet out? I don't know, I've not looked at punishment.
No.
It's an interesting thing to follow.
I think I didn't have a single chap in trouble for something like 9 weeks.
About punishments.
Well, the answer is, taking the general case, the punishments are a fraction of what they were when I joined. I was reading my midshipman's journal from 1950. One day in the Belfast, the commander was seeing 16 defaulters, and that sort of number was not uncommon. In an aircraft carrier in somewhere like Gibraltar, you'd have the whole forecastle laid out with drunks and I don't know what. You just don't see that now. In the Invincible, I had... first of all, during the Falklands time, I had 9 weeks, I think it was, with none at all. But taking the year through, I don't think it was markedly different to what I had in a minesweeper about 15 years ago, you know, with 35 sailors. It's right down. And
drunkenness presumably is a prime. I mean, that used to...
Yes, there wasn't any drunkenness. I'm talking about all aspects of indiscipline, be it people being late or whatever. And drunkenness was a part of it. But the scene has changed partly because somebody who really doesn't like the Navy can go, and does go. So you no longer have people who are really fighting the system or really unhappy within the system. And that used to happen. Small numbers, but they were there. And I think... he's a more educated man. I think that he's much better treated. And I have a feeling, and I suspect if one looked in parallels ashore, you would find similar results, that if you treat a man better, then he responds better. If you brutalize him, he will respond in a certain way, and that will include in discipline. take an example. I was the captain of a destroyer in Singapore in 59. It was hot. It was foully hot. There was no air conditioning. He slept in his hammock, on the table, on the bench, under the table, wherever. Came the end of the day, it wouldn't attract him. The thought of staying on board would be awful. I mean, it would be just sitting in a stew pot. So what did he do? He thought, well, I can't stand this, so I'll go ashore. So then he went ashore. When he went ashore, well, what does he do, really? He gets drunk, probably. And all that then flows from that. Now, in The Invincible, you have excellent accommodation, jolly nice mess decks with cushions, a television set, a couple of cans of beer to drink in the evening, and it's very much like sitting at home. You've got most of the facilities that you would have at home, and in very reasonable comfort. So if you've got that sort of comfort, why go out into the cold, wet night? And so you get fewer people in trouble. You know, these sort of, I think there are a number of factors, and I wouldn't put my finger on any one, but the overall results of it are really quite dramatic. I sent, in my 15 months on board, I think I sent two people to detention. Well, I can remember sending six chaps in a week once from a destroyer.
What were actually the two cases for?
One was a chap who was court-martialed for striking grievous bodily harm, I think it was, striking another chap with a bottle.
On board?
No, ashore. And the second one was a sailor who thumped the manageress of a nightclub or a bar or something.
The kind of offence you would expect among a, in civilian life, a similar sort of group of people.
Oh, yes, I think so. Yeah. But that was darling nice to me. I mean, I so much like, you know, I like to live with these, they're terribly nice people to spend your life with now, whereas they were rather bestial, some of them, in times of yore. They didn't do anything that was, you know, interesting, really. I mean, now they water ski and they sail and they run or they play games. If I think back to 1950, the hockey team was almost exclusively officers, as was the golf, the sailing, probably, and largely the rugger. Well, now, it's jolly difficult for any officers to get in the golf team. They'd all be chiefs who are playing off about three, and so on. And isn't that nice, I think? I think it's marvellous. They just do things, and other than just go and get drunk. It's a change in style. Now that, I suspect, partly signifies a change in the country. Partly, undoubtedly, signifies the fact that we're taking a more intelligent chap. So, you know, it's got to be careful what you read into all these things, but the end result is very attractive. Very attractive. And in mess life, the chief and petty officers have changed. Now that we've come off rum and they've got a bar, this interesting change, far from doing what some people forecasted would have people drunk all the time, not on your life. It leads to them having social evenings where their wives come on board dressed infinitely more smartly than any of the officers' wives, and it's changed their social habits 100% for the better. And now they have mess dinners, and they have mess dress and uniform, and I was dined out by the warrant and chief petty officers just like I was by the officers. And the whole thing was most attractive, I think.
has this altered then the relationships between the officers and the petty officers and the petty officers and the ordinary seamen and officers and ordinary seamen?
Yes. The we're much closer to each other now. People talk more readily across ranks and things. I contend that the association from top to bottom in a ship, despite the Naval Discipline Act, despite some call others Sir or PA or whatever it is probably more friendly and closer than it is in the average factory where they call each other Bill and Adam. Superficially we have these notes of demarcation, but in reality I think relationships are often very close indeed and are enjoyed by all sides. Whereas I suspect in many civilian organisations, whilst they're not worn on the sleeve, nevertheless, there's quite a lot of demarcation in other ways. You know, who uses the director's loo, and where people park their cars and all that. I mean, the same sort of things are there. And I think in the actual communication, I think we're probably pretty strong on communication in relative terms. That's a very subjective statement, but I suspect it may be true.